This is the Capital City Recap with Michael Cohen on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
1320 WILS on this Tuesday. Great to have you here. 51 at the moment. Tomorrow we're staying in the 50s, a high of 54, getting down to 23. We are expecting rain and snow tomorrow, mix. And then Thursday, a little colder, a high of just 33, a low of 20, and cloudy. Donald Trump this week saying, actually not this week, it was last week at CPAC, he talked about the fact that he doesn't represent the globe, that he represents the United States of America. But my next guest says he still has to deal with the dollar, which is essentially the global currency. Lowell Ponte with us, author of Money, Morality, and the Machine, Smith's Law in an Unethical, Overgoverned Age. Lowell, great to have you on WILS.
Michael, thank you for having me back. Yes, Donald Trump said we don't have a global anthem, a global currency, or a global flag. But in fact, we do have a global currency, the U.S. dollar. Since the end of World War II and the Bretton Woods Agreement, it has been the world's reserve currency. Mm-hmm. It used to be a blessing. Now it's become a kind of curse.
How so? What's the curse?
Well, the curse is tied up with one of the three options dealing with it. It's a thing called the Triffin Dilemma. That is, when our dollar was still backed by gold, or at least convertibility to gold for some people, like the European central banks, it had a certain solidity. It was inherently valuable. But now we've made it total fiat currency. Nixon ended gold convertibility in 1971, and when he did, it meant that we pay a price. Mm-hmm. For creating dollars, too. Every dollar we create makes all our other dollars worth a bit less.
And so take us back, 1971. Why did he actually make that decision back in 1971?
Because we've been fighting the Vietnam War on credit cards. We had simply been printing mountains of money to fight that war. And accordingly, he realized the French were on the verge of picking up all those dollars we'd been printing. They, in fact, had been the colonial masters of Vietnam.
The French were? How are they going to do that?
They were going to do that by coming to us and saying, we've got all these billions of dollar bills. We would like them converted to the gold you have in Fort Knox at $35 an ounce, please.
And that was about to happen, you're saying?
That was about to happen. And so to keep it from happening, Nixon ended the convertibility. This meant we no longer had a gold standard. Nixon desperately looked around to see what could be found, and he settled on an oil standard. That is, he had meetings with the Saudi Arabians. Mm-hmm. He agreed with them that we would protect Saudi Arabia in exchange for which Saudi Arabia would only accept U.S. dollars for its oil.
And what did that do to the dollar then at that point?
Well, we went from a gold standard to an oil standard, in effect.
Okay.
The basis for the dollar still being the world reserve currency then became that was the only currency you could buy oil in.
And where are we at now then? I mean, that's still the case, right?
Well, the Saudi royal family has 20,000 people. It's I won't say it's shaky, but it could be taken down at any time. It's in a life and death conflict upcoming with Iran that is taking shape. And we have put our chips on the Saudis in order to keep our dollar stable. Now, if the Saudis were to withdraw, or if the Triffin standard would keep pulling our economy backward, we would be in a good deal of trouble. I mean, you would see the dollar, if the Saudis withdrew, go up in a puff of smoke.
Oh, no
basically,
kidding.
We would have very strong inflation, and that inflation would eat up most of the value you've been saving.
What would become the dominant currency at that point, then?
Well, one alternative is the International Monetary Fund special drawing rights based on a basket of currencies would become the currency, but then we would cease to be the dominant world economic power. You see, there's something to be said for having the world reserve currency. It means you can print a $100 bill for 2 cents. The other countries that need to buy oil with that money, they have to create $100 worth of goods.
No kidding.
So it puts us in a much superior position. But we overused that in Vietnam, and so we're now strained. What Donald Trump may do, what he's talked about doing, is restoring the gold standard to the dollar, a kind of third alternative between muddling through and going to special drawing right. Okay. If we went back to a gold dollar, we would have an inherently valuable dollar.
Now, how do you do that, though, with so many dollar bills out there right now?
You have to stretch the amount of gold real thin. Gold would become valued at about $5,000 or more to the ounce. But you can still have a gold standard based on that, because we do have a whole lot of dollars and relatively little gold.
So, that, I mean, you're saying something that would just spike the price of gold very quickly, it sounds like.
Well, remember, the school of thought we're dealing with here is that gold never changes. Gold's price is always the same. The only thing that changes is the value of paper currency relative to gold. So the dollar would be acknowledged as being, you'd have to have 5,000 of them to buy 1 ounce of gold. But that ounce of gold didn't really change value. What Nixon did, for example, by ending the gold standard we had until 71, if you took a 1971 dollar today, how much would it cost to buy the same amount of goods? About $6.
Six, okay.
So they had a 500% inflation, as it were.
Is it now? What happens then to all our dollars when we make a decision like that? How does that affect our standard of living?
Well, it can affect you in a lot of ways. I mean, you may be saving, hoping you can retire, and everyone tells you, "Oh, put away money; it's going to be so good for you." Well, what you can buy today for $100 by the time you retire may cost $1,500.
But we hear, though, the dollar's so strong now. How do you explain that compared to other currencies?
It is strong relative to other currencies because they're also fiat money. Mm-hmm. They're also basically not worth the paper they're printed on. We have a world based on faith-based currency,
right,
which, as long as people believe in it, is doable. But if people begin to lose faith in it, if they begin to think we're just printing money willy-nilly, then we have a kind of hyper-taxation. Remember, inflation is a tax. Mm-hmm. And so when you decide to tax the dollar in any intense way with inflation by just printing a lot more of them, for example, you may think you have done really well because you made cabinets for Mrs. McGillicuddy and she paid you off the books and, gee, you didn't even have to pay tax on it. But the government, through inflation, can destroy the value of the dollars you have hidden under your back closet floor.
QE, right? The Fed QE, that's behind us now, and people haven't lost faith yet. What would cause them to lose faith?
What would cause them to lose faith is any step the government had to take to prop up the economy. The situation we're in right now is we're propping up the world economy with the dollar being the world currency. But every time we print a dollar, we devalue subtly our own currency. Mm-hmm. Now, we're not losing value relative to other currencies because they are falling even faster than we are. So you're skydiving with other people, uh-huh, and they're going down faster than you are, and so you think, my, I'm in good shape. No, you're also falling. Right. The dollar is also losing value. And, of course, we now have the political war of Janet Yellen, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, who has quietly committed herself as a liberal to bringing down Donald Trump. Every 1% increase he generates in the economy, he plans to generate 1% rise in the interest rates.
Well, we'll
and that
see,
will put we'll, brakes we'll, on the economy.
Yeah, we'll see if the Fed goes through with that. They've been very nervous, right, about actually taking any action with the interest rate.
By the way, we explain all this kind of intricacy in our latest book, Money, Morality, and the Machine. If people would like an absolutely free copy of this, this is a 250-page book, all you need to do is call a toll-free number. We'll pay for the shipping, and everything won't cost you a penny. But it will scare you to death when you realize what's really happening to the economy and international
politics. What's the number, Lo?
1-800-630-1492, like Columbus sailing the ocean blue. 1-800-630-1492.
Hey, Lo, let me ask you this, because you were at one point, you were a reporter in D.C. yourself, and we've got President Trump speaking tonight. What's your view on how the media is dealing with him?
Well, the establishment media has always been dishonest toward Republicans and conservatives, and I speak as a libertarian. I'm able to stand apart from them. It didn't appear to be quite so bad because the press and even Republicans and Democrats used to be much closer to each other. Mm-hmm. Now they'd go out and picnic with each other on weekends and so on. I was a conservative, but I'd go picnic with the gang from the New Republic magazine and so on. So there wasn't this active hostility that we see today, which has been exacerbated by Trump's election. After all, the only thing progressives have, I mean, they've given up God and everything else, is that what they worship is government and power. And they've had government and power taken away from them.
Okay.
So they're going, and so they're going berserk.
And his reaction to the press, calling them liars and horrible people and so on, is that going to work?
He didn't call the whole press liars and so on. He called groups like CNN and the New York Times liars. And I think any person objectively, even a liberal journalist, if you speak to him privately behind closed doors, he'll agree. You know, they're just out to get Trump ideologically, and they'll skew news coverage any way they have to do that.
Are they going to succeed, ultimately?
They might. I mean, people can be fooled by it. I rather think, though, that at least for Trump's core, about 44% of the people, there is a commitment that we're not going to let the press trick us into taking... You know what? Normally what the press does is it will find some moral flaw in a conservative. Oh, he was once seen in a strip club or something. Mm-hmm. And that will make conservatives not vote for someone who's on their side. I think conservatives now are of the attitude they're not going to let the usual liberal tricks make them turn against their own guy.
Well, I should say the press is locked in on this Russia connection, and they're digging more and more into the connections he has financially and otherwise to these oligarchs. Do you think that'll end up being a problem for him?
Oh, it might, though I doubt it. But you see, if that does begin to open and become serious, then we have the other problem. There is now a great deal of evidence beginning to surface that Hillary Clinton was very close to the communist Chinese, getting money and favors and help from China.
Uh-huh.
So pick your poison. If Trump is Russia and Hillary and the Democrats are China, plus the Muslim world. I mean, Democrats get a great deal of money from the Muslim world now.
Uh-huh. Do you think basically any politician can be made to look somehow dishonest or immoral by in any standard? Is that how it works?
No, I think we're saying to the extent that he was immoral, we'll just go with it. You know, there is still not a single shred of evidence that one vote anywhere in the country was changed by Russia interfering.
Yeah, I've never understood that. I mean, essentially, they're talking about the emails hacked from Hillary's staff, but that didn't seem to. I don't think that skewed the election in any way.
Well, even I mean, the embarrassing thing about the hacks is it had to come from a foreign source. Mm. I mean, if the New York Times was a real newspaper, if the Washington Post was a real newspaper, they would have been reporting that kind of corruption by Hillary. But, of course, they weren't. The greatest irony in the election, of course, is who made Donald Trump the Republican nominee in the first place? Answer, the liberal media. As even the New York Times said, the liberal press gave Donald Trump $2 billion worth of free publicity that was used to stamp out his opponents because they thought he'd be the easiest Republican to beat. Well, as it turns out, he was the hardest Republican to beat. But they created him. Conservatives didn't create Donald Trump.
Lowell Ponte, the book, brand new book, Money, Morality, and the Machine. And you can reach him, get the book, 800-630-1492.
And it's free.
Free, that's the key. Free. Not a lot of things in life are free, Lowell. You know that?
Free book, free shipping, free everything.
Great stuff. Hey, Lowell, it's been a pleasure. As always, great to have you on WILS. Thank you very much.
My honor, Michael. Yep.